You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations Podcast. From New York City, I'm Rekha Shankar. Now, you might have noticed that Andy Bucias isn't here. He's not feeling well, so I'm hopping in for round four, coming back from L.A. And my guest today is John Timothy, who improv fans might know from Sandino and The Curfew. John, what's up?
Hey. I'm doing very well.
Good.
How are you?
Good. I got so many questions for you, so I'm just going to jump
great.
In.
Great. Let's go for it.
You're from Indiana, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Were you like a comedy nerd as a kid?
Kind of, yeah. When I would buy books, I would always try to convince my parents to buy me like joke books.
Yeah.
Like I thought that was like the best thing that could happen. And then, you know, you would get lucky and catch, Robin Williams on TV late at night if you were staying up when your parents didn't want you to. And that kind of stuff was amazing. I also wanted to be a magician for a long time.
Whoa. Both of those are sort of related, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I think I saw the, like, oh, this is the guy can be funny in front of a lot of people, and people, like, applaud for him. Because I don't think I understood that, like, being a comedian was, like, a job someone could have, you know?
Yeah, it's nuts that magician appeared to be more of a job.
Yeah, it was much more practical. Like, I understood, this person does magic.
I know where this person goes to college to study this.
Yes, exactly. They go to magic school. We'd go to this restaurant almost every Sunday, every other Sunday, or at least as often as I could convince my parents to take me. And they would have this wandering magician who would, like, walk around, and, like, we became pals, and I kept trying to get him to, like, show me all of his tricks.
Whoa, what was your favorite?
He did one where you would write, God, what was it? It's you would write a letter on your finger or something, or on a cube of sugar, and then through like some like manipulation, he would get it to show up on the bottom of your palm through like pressing it and water. It's very complicated, but I remember being blown away.
Wow, that's like part science, part magic.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so. Did you study Asian civilizations? Is that accurate?
I got that very stereotypical comedian's degree of Asian languages and civilizations. Yeah.
What prompted you to study that? That's awesome.
Oh boy. So it's basically a degree in Japanese literature, I guess. And so that's what I mainly focused in. And so part of it was that I knew I kind of wanted to do this comedy stuff when I got out. And, like, I was very fortunate to be in an improv group in college that had a show once a week for an hour and a half and then had two rehearsals a week. And so that was kind of like, oh, this is, I think, the most important class I'm taking. And then when it came to be junior year and I had to pick a major, I knew it didn't matter that much. And so I looked at what I was closest to and I was like, well, I guess I'm an Asian languages and civilizations major.
Wow. What? So you had clearly taken a bunch of classes in that. What, like, drew you to that?
It started in high school when I really got tired of Spanish. I got tired of being bad at, or like being mediocre at Spanish.
Sure.
You know? Because I'd taken it and been okay at it for so long. And then in my high school, you had to either take 3 years of one language or two and two. So I started taking Japanese in high school because I thought that would be cool and different.
Yeah.
And it would help me with like video games or something.
Real world, yeah.
And, yeah, really practical. Real life stuff. That's number one guiding decision for so many of my life. Things I've chosen. It's practical. Practical.
But that's awesome. I don't know. I feel like that's like a cool. I've never like. Yeah, I don't know many comedians with that kind of background. That's really cool. So you did improv in college.
Yeah.
Did you know about UCB?
I did. It's kind of funny. Like, so I very single-mindedly came to New York to pursue UCB.
Wow.
Like, because I remember being a kid. Like, my parents got divorced when I was 13 or so, and I finally got my own room. And then I had a TV in that room for the first time. And I remember taking advantage of that to watch whatever was on TV late at night, way past when I was previously allowed to stay up, and running into the UCB show, like, in its first or second season, and watching, like, Ass Pennies, I think, on its first airing when it was on there, and being like, what is this? I didn't know you could do this. This is insane. And so I became a big fan of the show, found out it was an improv place, started doing improv in high school. In college, I took my first 101 while I was in college. Like, I got an internship in New York, basically so that I could have an excuse to take a class at UCB.
Whoa. Yeah. And, like, what was your 101 like?
Oh, terrible. the worst. Man, this would have been 2000. Gee, this would have been 2006.
Yeah.
So this was, like, back in the old training center. But it was still new. Like, the air conditioning was still new in the old training center at that point. They were, like, very excited about it. Terrible. Like, Betsy Stover was an angel for, like, putting up with us. Because I think it was just a lot of people who, I don't know, like, I don't think it was as much of a thing back then. So you just got, like, a wilder, weirder group of people.
Right,
yeah. And so you just got, like, all those people you remember from, like, your 101. I think there were, like, two or three more of them back then. I just remember... We had like one good scene, like week six, between two dudes who were already friends coming in.
Yeah.
And then one of the crazy people, like, raised their hand, was like, how did they do that good scene? And it took everything Betsy had to very generously be like, well, they're being patient. They listen. They say yes and, you know, all of those things that we've been talking about. two more up.
Yeah. Oh, man. So did you take all your classes after that, like, back-to-back? Did you have to wait?
I had to wait, yeah. And so I took that kind of because I was going to be the director of my improv group senior year in college.
Yeah.
So I could get the knowledge and, like, really drop some truth bombs. It turns out they don't teach you that much critical improv game theory in 101. And so I basically went back and taught them what I had gleaned from watching Harold Knight a couple times, like the idea of an opening. The idea of, like, yeah, you do it, you do the thing, and you, I had no idea what I was talking about, which is very charming to think about now. But everyone took it as gospel because I said, well, I took a class at UCB, and they're like, wow, okay, yeah,
wow,
right, let's get in line. Like, I think there are still some games or exercises I made that my college group still does that I thought was what long form was, and now when I see it, I'm like, oh no, this babies, you got to stop this.
Do you remember any of the exercises?
Oh, I remember one. I remember being a fan of, I think it was Mailer Damon, and they would do maybe they did an invocation or they did some kind of, like, monologue thing, and I was like, cool, got it.
nailed it.
And then I had them do this thing where you just get seven people across the stage and they would each say, like, I am a barber, like, one after the other. And then after them, they'd be like, I cut hair weird, or, like, whatever their thing was. And I'm like, cool, solid opening, guys. to the back. Let's go nail this.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Oh, man. Youth, huh?
Yeah, right. That's
so fun.
So you go through the system. Who were some, like, what were some of your favorite classes?
I think my 201 Neil Casey was, I think, a very informative class, just because Neil Casey's amazing. Hi, Neil. I'm going to email this to you so you listen. Still looking for your validation. So in 201, Neil gave me a very important note that I haven't had the guts to say to any student since, but, like, I was doing something, and after the scene, he was like, John, here's the thing. You're acting like a cartoon up there, and you're never going to be as funny as a cartoon. Like, that's impossible. Cartoons are the funniest thing. So why don't you stop trying to act like a fucking cartoon and act like a human being? And I was like, okay, Neil. But he was not wrong.
Yeah.
Like, he was absolutely correct. I was trying to be all, like, hello, I'm the cop. And I wasn't getting what I wasn't getting anything out of it.
From the point of view of like a 201 student, because like now you can maybe have perspective and be like, oh yeah, you're not wrong. What did that feel like in 201?
Oh, daddy left me.
Yeah. I feel like those kind of things are debilitating, but like so many people are able to like take the good from it and rise. But like at the time.
At the time it's done, yeah. But he wasn't wrong. Like,
yeah.
Like thankfully, I don't know. Like I think I'd been doing it long enough that part of me was like, oh, what is he, like, I think my ego protected me from it, being like, oh, he doesn't know anything, like, in the moment.
Yeah.
But then, like, a little later, being like, no, that guy's right. Oh, boy.
Oh, man. So, house team audition stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So, when did you start auditioning?
So I formed my first indie team out of that 201 with this group, Futuro, that had some wonderful people in it. Jameson Guest, Carrie McGuire, Josh Ratchford, Kate Donat, all kinds of lovely people. And we were taking all of our classes basically simultaneously. Come 401, we were off by a week, or we were off by 2 weeks. Jameson started a 401 that started 2 weeks earlier than mine. Herald auditions fell in that week in the middle. So Jameson got to audition, got on, and then I was a week too late to audition. Not that I would have gotten on. I think I was pretty terrible at that point. But like I remember being like, oh man, coulda, woulda, shoulda. And so then I auditioned the year after.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And did you get on?
I did, yeah.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool. I got on, so like I only auditioned once, but it was literally the longest you could be like around and doing it without like having only auditioned once.
Yeah, how many years had you been doing improv by then?
If we're counting college, which I think is fair, seven, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like four in college, one in high school, and then four, five, and then like two in New York.
Okay.
So yeah.
So what was your first team?
Sandino.
That's crazy first team.
So lovely. Yeah,
like,
so great.
People still talk about San Diego. There's shirts. People have
shirts. Yeah. Yeah. I think I lost my shirt somewhere. It really makes me sad every time. Yeah. What a lovely team. I love those guys.
Did you guys click from the beginning?
Our first show, I think you could, in the rehearsal, everyone was just so freaked out, you know, like, oh my God, this is it. This is it.
Yeah.
And then our first show, I remember being like, oh, this is so easy. Oh, look at, oh, this guy's funny and this guy's funny and she's funny and she's funny. Oh, that. Let's just do that. Let's keep doing that.
Was it anybody else's first team?
It was six of the eight of us.
Okay.
So Nate Dernan, Kate Riley, Kate Zielinski, Nate Riley. They had been on a team prior for like 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
So that kind of helped. Like they were kind of like a buoying influence. They were like, "All right, this is what we need to focus on. Keep your head in the game. We're gonna do this." So their leadership was very helpful, I think.
Yeah.
In kind of righting the ship.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, it also helped that we had kind of a chip on our shoulder a little bit about, like, feeling like we were, like, the land of forgotten toys or whatever. Like, you know, we were clearly, like, this hodgepodge of people, kind of, like, leftovers is, at least, not true, but, like, it's what it felt like at the time. And so I think we went in with the lowest expectations, which I think took a lot of the edge off, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts that you're saying that, too, because I don't think anyone would describe you guys as a hodgepodge now. They'd be
right,
like, oh, yeah, that team had to be that team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so, I mean, just, like, the perspective warp of, like, being in it.
It's weird. It's, like, it's taught me a lot about, like chemistry and what you can plan. Like, because I don't think any of the eight of us, like, we may have known one or two, but I don't think any, had we put together our own team, I don't think any of us would have really picked maybe one at most of the other people.
Yeah.
Just because they weren't on our radar or like, oh, they're not like, they don't think like me or something like that. And it's just, what a crapshoot that kind of thing can be.
Yeah.
Makes you want to play with like more people that you think you shouldn't just to see what happens.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like how much of that chemistry in an improv team, especially one that you're not putting together, is like willingness to create chemistry and is just like luck, like natural chemistry?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I think 50-50 maybe.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's that.
Yeah.
Some of it's, I don't want to call it magic, but like some of it's just like you don't know until you're there. And then half of it's going in with the tude of like, I'm going to make this work. Like,
right.
Or I'm going to be open to this.
Yeah. And do you think that's something, because you said it was like you guys came in with low expectations, that that came from that of just like, yeah, I'm going to make this work.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we were just like, hey, as long as we don't get cut in the next 6 months, we won.
Right.
You know, like we did it. And then things started going well, and success begets success. You know, like when you have a good show, it's so much easier to just be like, oh, pressure's off.
Yeah.
You don't have to prove anything again.
Yeah.
And then you can just kind of go do good work.
That's awesome. So, yeah. Like, you guys became, I mean, I feel like you guys are one of the most, like, legendary teams of the theater. And, I mean, the t-shirts,
right.
Remember?
Well, sure. We got t-shirts, so that definitely puts us in top five, I think.
Top five, I think. So, like, what would you say Sandina's style was?
I think very organic.
Yeah.
Trusting, I think. It's yeah. The most amount of trust I've ever had on an improv team, I think. Just because, like, so this is a very silly example, but I think it's kind of indicative of a lot of stuff. There was one scene when Nate Dern was walking around, and he was, like, doing some kind of presentational thing and walking around downstage doing something, and I'm leaning kind of shoulders crossed, you know, arms crossed on the back line. And something about his body language as he's facing the audience, I just realized, like, oh, he's about to sit down. And there's no chair there. He's like, but something about the read was like, oh, and so I grab a chair and I fling it across the stage. Like, I slide it. It scoots directly under him as he's sitting down into the chair.
Wow.
Right? Without a look. He doesn't look. He just sits down and there's a chair there. And after the show, we were like, Nate, why did you start sitting down? There was no chair there. And his, like, best answer was like, I just knew there'd be a chair there when I went to sit. Like,
wow.
That's what I knew. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Wow, that's very cool. That's, yeah, I feel like when I saw you guys, it was just this, like, immense amount of trust, which is, like, really infectious to watch, you mm-hmm. know? It's like, I don't even care if you're doing a full, like, I don't care mm-hmm. if it's a Herald. It's just, yeah. like, it feels like a Herald, or it's like.
Yeah, it's got the bones in there somewhere
yeah.
under a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, like, where did the organics sort of, like, direction come from?
I think that was our vibe.
Yeah.
Kind of pretty early on. Like, and we had Kevin Hines, their coach, for a long time, or for the first 2 months. And then we had Eric Tenoy. And I think Eric really pushed us in that direction because he saw what we were doing. And he was always like, if you can do what you do in your, like, organic warm-up on stage, we're done. Like, good job, Herald finished. Just because there was just so much, I don't know, play, healthy play. And it's weird. That team is so bonkers because I think it's got a lot of huge personalities on it
mm-hmm.
that, like it's like a big family because I don't – everybody doesn't always get along all the time. But I think that's – everyone has the ability to put ego aside and do, like, the work.
Right.
And, like, it's bizarre. Like, it's maybe one of the most, like, infighty, like, people you know, people get on each other's nerves because it's like a family
yeah.
but then the work is the most trusting, like, giving kind of thing, which is, again, it's like you can't plan that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it either happens or it doesn't.
Yeah. And, like, so even past Sandino, it seems like you still, like, dug organics.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What about it appeals to you?
Yeah, I love organic work. I love like thematic work.
Yeah.
I think it really plays to my personal strengths as, like, a planner or, like, a big picture kind of guy. Like, I've always thought that my improv game, you know, like, I'm better at, like, the big show stuff than I am at, like, the line to line.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be terrible at one, but I've always thought that's where maybe I am a little stronger.
Yeah.
And so I love it. So I teach this thematic class, right?
Yes.
Thematic Herald class, which I love, and everyone in it is so good, and it's a great joy to, like, bring this kind of, like, mind-opening work to very talented people. And I think I love it because it makes the work mean something a bit more. Like, it's very easy to go out and just crank out, like, okay, suggestions, pineapple, great, we're on a beach, we're on to this, boom, 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 and then, like, hey, laughs achieved. And once you can do that, I think it's much more satisfying to try to find something to say.
Yeah.
Like, if the suggestion is, like, old age, like, well, sure, you can do you can do five scenes with, like, old people, sure. Or, like, you can try and say something about old age and be funny, which
yeah.
seems to be, I don't know, it's harder, but it's, I think, more satisfying when it works.
Yeah. So, like, when you, John Timothy, mm-hmm. are on the back line in an organic
mm-hmm.
show,
mm-hmm.
what are things you're kind of looking for to make those, like, big show-wide moves? Mm. Maybe there's no, like, specific answer, but when
sure.
you're, like, teaching your class,
yeah.
you know, what do you tell them, like, to, like, maybe watch out for a potential to make a theme
sure.
move?
The first thing I tell them and the first thing we do, like, on day one of this class is, like, what does this suggestion mean to you? Like, what do you think of when you hear beach, what does that make you think of? And if people say like, oh, that one time I got sunburned and I had the worst family vacation ever, like, great, cool. We can do a show that is a family's terrible, like, vacation, and that will, like, give us more meaning and bring us more truth than just doing a bunch of scenes about suntan lotion or about, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, really figuring out how to bring yourself in and, like, what that means to you into the show. So that's, like, content-wise. And then structure-wise, I'm always trying to get people to do crazy things that a herald, you know, a herald doesn't have to look like a herald all the time.
Yeah.
Like the example I give a bunch. Most of my examples are moves I made on Sandino that did not work out because I was not good at, I wasn't, like, the ones that went well, I'm like, cool, good work. The ones that I didn't do correctly haunt me in my sleep to this day. So, like, the one I give a lot is, like, octopus. Like, oh, suggestion of the octopus. I remember on the back line being like, oh, cool. Let's do 8 first beats, 8 second beats, 8 third beats because that will make it, like, an octopusy herald. Cool, good. Now, if I'd done something clear, like, explain that, and that would have really – it would have been a really good show. Instead, I think I edited the first scene, like, after 15 seconds and just said one, being, like, meaning, like, one of
yes.
8 – that isn't how that read, and instead everyone just started yes-anding me, doing like that counting to 20 game, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So our show went like 35 minutes long because we had to do like a counting game in between each that meant nothing, like it didn't do anything.
So if you had to go back to like make that move more, mm-hmm. like the clearest mm-hmm. you wanted to make it, what would you do?
I might even do before the first beat be like the Octopus Herald. Mm. 8 beats go like just it that's very on the nose,
yes.
But I don't know, as you get it, as you do it more, you start to appreciate being clear and doing the show as opposed to being vague and maybe it not working out.
Because from an audience perspective, I think nobody remembers that moment where it's like,
nope.
He really ham-fisted yeah. telling us it was an octopus herald and that ruined my
yeah.
Nobody thinks that.
No definitely not.
But even going off of what you just said about like wanting to have done that differently. Mm-hmm. Like, organics leaves the door open to so many things mm-hmm. that don't work out.
Oh, yeah.
What do you either tell yourself or, like, your students in the thematic class, like, that kind of, like, being willing to step into the unknown and to, like how should they deal with, like, a show that just flops? Like,
oh,
or,
yeah.
like, a move that flops?
So, like after the show?
Yeah.
And, like, how to deal with, like, it just imploding
yeah.
on you. I think a note that I give a bunch after like a class show is that like I am absolutely okay with us having just a disaster of a show because we tried for too much. It'll make me very upset if we have a lackluster show because we didn't try anything at all.
Mm.
You know, like I would much rather us go out there, try 5 things, it explodes, than like do a safe herald and like the suggestion is fish. Great. Our edits will like do fish gills and
yeah.
be like blah 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 blah. That's so boring.
Yeah.
It's like why are we even bothering, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's just refocusing people's sense of like worth or satisfaction from like work and what you attempt,
right?
Rather than like the result, because the result will come.
Yes.
If you do the work.
Yeah. So like focusing on process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I feel like is like a good, in general, like life goal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, training yourself to like, oh, if I sit down and write for 5 pages today.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good they are as long as I do it tomorrow and the day after. And the
yeah.
day after.
So what is like the coolest organic set either that you've been a part of or seen?
I was a really big fan of, we did, Sandino did one that was a vaudeville herald that
ooh.
I was really a big fan of. Like, the suggestion was, I think, it was like, maybe it was vaudeville. I think it was vaudeville. And so then Brandon Gulia steps out and is like, welcome, Herald Knight of 1945. We've got a big show for you. And so then we just did, like, a USO show, basically, in 1945. And then in the in the first group game, we start shouting about how, like, this is a big deal. The president's in the audience. And so for the second group game, we're about to start. And so, like, I run back to the backstage, and there's that wheelchair back there, right?
Yeah, oh, man.
And then, like, Alan's back there with me. And, like, I look at him, and he looks at me. And I was like, well, you get one. And so then I sat in the wheelchair and rolled out to be FDR.
Yeah.
To like the legitimate shock of everybody on stage, because they were like, he shouldn't be in a wheelchair. That was very fun. I think that was one of the ones where like you're like, oh look, like you did a show, it had a theme, you still did good work in the middle,
yeah,
and like you did the work.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So the movie.
Oh yes.
You are teaching picture show now.
I am. Yes.
What's you were in the movie class originally, right?
Yeah, back in the day, yeah.
So what is it like to now like be teaching it?
Oh, I love it. It's so good. It's so hard.
Yeah.
They're so much better than my class was. Sorry guys. They're so good. And I think that's also, it's funny to like watch kind of the institution grow like
yeah.
that, because like back, I mean, my class had like, it had Don Finelli, it had James Dwyer.
Yeah.
It had all kinds of very, Dan Hodapp, all kinds of very fun people. Just the density wasn't there. Like, it was most of our first ASPs, and like a lot of these people in this one have taken 3 or 4
yeah.
and they've been here years longer than, just because there's just this glut of talent. And so they're just, I think, stronger. The movie is my favorite form. It's doing, there's still a class show I remember, taught by like Neil and Dynamo. Where afterwards Neil came back and told us, oh yeah, if you guys had like done this move and this move, you would have gotten a standing ovation from the audience. It's the closest I've ever felt to flying while I was doing like an improv show.
Wow!
Just like when the movie locks in, every move is like 4 moves. It's like because you're. It's a funny move in the moment. It's a funny move in the scene. It's a funny move against the genre.
Yeah.
The audience, you like, everything is an expectation. It's really wonderful. But it's also the hardest, just the hardest monster. It's, oh, God, the ways you can screw that form up.
Yeah, I feel like there's such a huge, risk of, like, not paying off the stuff you set
mm-hmm.
up
oh,
and,
yeah.
like, not... Maybe not playing game and playing
oh,
too
yeah.
much plot. Like,
oh, it's
what?
So many things to do wrong.
Yeah,
it's just a glut of things to do wrong.
What do you do to avoid some of these pitfalls? Because the movie like defies so many things you know that we try, like UCB mm-hmm. tries to emphasize, like mm-hmm. don't do plot, do game.
Yeah.
Like those sort of things.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I think the big thing about the movie, and any genre work, I think, at large, is that the question you need to be asking yourself is not like, well, what happens to these characters next? It's, in this genre, what are the other scenes we need to see?
Right.
So if you're in a bank heist movie and you've got your, you know, your main guy, we don't care whether he, like, goes and gets the tools or, like, he goes and, like, meets the villain. Like, we don't care about, like, the small stuff. We care, like, now is the time when we see the montage where we get the team together. Now is the scene where we, you know, and you just get enough of those, the scene wears stacked in order.
Yeah.
And you put the same main character with the same name in each of those scenes, and all of a sudden you've created a story that's not actually a story. Like, you've written it backwards.
Mm.
You've kind of given the illusion of having a narrative-driven thing, but the narrative is actually just comes from, like, looking backwards at it and kind of connecting the dots, which the audience will do for you because they're so familiar with the genre that you're doing.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And how does the idea of, like, maybe it doesn't tie in, but, like, of organics tie into something like the movie where it does have these, like, kind of, like, well, it's best practices, mm-hmm. you know, include this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So I think in terms of, like, organic, like, there's so much – it's a very thinky kind of form, like, because you have to scene paint. So if you're unfamiliar with the movie, you have to do 3 scene paintings at the top of the show, and then you have to – not off of usually a song lyric, and you have to convey through your scene painting not only games for everybody, but like the genre that this movie is in. And it's not enough that it's a cowboy movie. You don't have to, but you should be. It'll help you a lot if you're specific down to like, this is a spaghetti western.
Mm.
Like, this is like a, this is like a classic black and white western, because the rules and the genre are all different across all of them. And so it requires a lot of top-down thinking that you then have to somehow let go of while you're in the scene and play the scene and, like, listen and do, like, game on top of.
Yeah, that's super fun. Mind fuck.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. It is. It's you can. It's really fun to see the students in my class. Like around week 3 or 4, they just get this kind of like wide eyed look as they start after each show. They're like, "What happened?" Like they just went into a coma for like 20 minutes, and they snap out of it. It's really. It makes you want, like, after their first class show, all of them are like, I am so exhausted. Mm-hmm. I am so tired. When you're doing it and it's working well, you feel like you're on fire. Like,
yeah.
You're just like, everything is awake. You're listening and reacting to theme, content, form, structure.
Yeah.
Plot. Like, you're writing, you're editing, you're doing cinematography, you're doing special effects. Like, you're using your whole self in every moment when it's going well. And it's... I have yet to find another form that like replicates that.
Yeah, I feel like those are the feelings you get after doing like a 2-prov practice that was 3 hours long.
Yeah,
because you had to be in every scene and you had no time to think about anything else.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I think that's probably pretty close. Too,
yeah.
Like 2-person when you just have to do the whole, you have to do it all.
Yeah.
And there's no time to break.
That's nuts. Okay, so if you had your John Timothy, mm-hmm. How to Be the Best Improviser on Earth book.
Great.
What are, like, the tenets of it?
That's great. Well, luckily, I have stolen a lot from Will Hines over the course of time, so that makes it pretty easy. I think the number one thing I try to convey to students is that, like, there's all these rules, right? We have so many rules. Like, we're famous for having rules in a book. Compared to all the other places. And I think it draws a certain kind of person to it. But that all these rules are only there to get you out of your own way. Like, to, like, teach you how to... Like, all this yes and, all of this, like, play real is just to, I think, to strip artifice away from, like, your performance and to, like, allow you to get in touch with, like, your whole self, like, your true self. Because, you know, like, the longer you do this, like... The more, and I think this is a trope that people say, but like the more you start to appreciate the fact that all you can really bring is yourself, and if you are like distanced from yourself, or you are like doing like somebody else's thing, or you're doing what you think is supposed to be right, like that's not, then you're never going to be great. Like you'll only ever be a poor man's version of somebody else.
Right.
You know, and so it's hard. Like there is a period where you have to get obsessed with this, like. That was the thing that Neil would always say. He's like, nobody ever got good at this that wasn't kind of obsessed with it for a while. Like, you have to go through that boot camp kind of phase, be it a year, 2 years, whatever, where, like, you just live and breathe it so all these rules, like, sink in. But then at a certain point, you have to stop leading with the rules and start leading with yourself. And when a scene's not working, be like, oh, huh, check in with the rules. Be like, well, why is the scene out? Oh, justification. Got it. Okay. Like, you should be able to, on the fly, adjust that way.
Right. It's your tool belt. It's not like your confines.
Yeah,
or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I think, yeah. Like figuring out, you got to build it. You know, that like, you got to build it into your bones, but you don't lead with it.
Yeah.
After a while.
Sure.
Or else you'll never really start flying.
Yeah. Okay. So like for like students, if somebody's in 101 and wants to know like what's the best way to get better at improv for me right now.
Sure.
What would you advise?
I think in 101 through 301,
yeah.
I'd say. Like, I think the note I give the most, and it's, I know, I can see in their eyes they hate me. Like, I know they hate this. But the answer is always just, like, do it more. Like, I wish it were, like, better. I wish I had a better answer. But it's always just, like, do it more. Like, you need more reps. Like, you still can't, you are not, like, comfortable just existing on stage. And you're never going to, like... be able to listen, or you're never going to be able to yes and from a comfortable yourself place if you've got like wide-eyed panic every time you're on stage, and that just comes through doing it and doing it and doing it.
Yeah.
And then I've got like the things that I personally think are more important that like students focus on. So that's I think probably just like the first note,
yeah.
Regardless of their thing. The thing I think the trap people fall into a lot is I think this is even like a Hines term, like being allergic to your base reality. Like, in organic scene work, I think people really get caught up. Like, they've been doing the Herald, they've been doing openings, they've been doing pattern game, and they try to start the organic scene work like they're playing from an opening. Like they try, you know, like the suggestion is football. Okay, I'm the football coach, but I think you should all play like Pac-Man. And now you're a ghost. And like they try to like grind blood out of a stone somehow. Or someone will be like, someone will start with like, okay, here we are at this football game. And then someone will be like, this second line will be like, oh, I hate football. Or, oh, football sucks. To like create some kind of conflict or like create some kind of weird thing. Rather than like just those basics of yes and. And I think it comes from experience. Like this is a thing you see a lot. Like you're bad at this because you're afraid. Then you get okay at it because you're listening to the rules. And then you get good again. And then you're like, I don't need to do that. Like I can make funny happen so fast. And it just is so exhausting to watch.
Yeah. So like for students too that want to like be on a house team, like mm-hmm. in their advanced level, maybe they've done a bunch of auditions. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it's the same advice, but like what advice would you give those people?
I think so from a strictly practical sense, like if we're talking like auditions yeah. and like that kind of thing, I think the big piece of advice is go do your own thing. Like I think there's some people that are very good and just don't have visibility.
Yes.
Like, you know, like, and it's a shame that that is like an issue, but it's just like, oh, if you take one class a year and maybe that teacher's not in the room, then maybe you're just not as visible. So then you have to be spectacular on a level that maybe people who are just seen more don't have to be. And so I think increasing your visibility, and that doesn't mean in like a crass, like networky sense, but it means like go make your own show, like go do your own thing. Like Dan Hodapp, I know, was always good. He was always been good. That's what a curse that man has. He's always been great at improv as long as I've known him. But like he just wasn't getting on teams. And so he went and started his own show, The Scene, I think at the Pit. Yeah, Pit Magnet.
So he started this
where it was like kind of like a more play thing that they would do. And he ran that for 2 years and like everybody did the show and it was like, this guy's great. Like, and then he eventually got on and maybe it's that he got better in a way that was appreciable, but they're probably one and the same. Like doing that show with great people probably made him better slash people are like, oh, this guy's good. I've seen him do good work.
Yeah, and kind of like what you were saying earlier, he's comfortable in his own skin and bones mm-hmm. on stage
yeah.
through that, like, just pure reps mm-hmm. and knows what he likes to bring to the table just on his own.
Exactly.
Without yeah. outside influence of what he should bring to the
yeah,
table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you're performing for somebody, performing's a funny beast because you're there for an audience and you don't want to be too self-indulgent to the point that you exclude the audience, but at a certain point you have to do what you think is funny.
Right.
Like, you can't be second-guessing yourself for them, because then again, you're never going to be like your true, genuine. Like you're going to lessen your value as a comedian if
right.
you're always trying to jump ahead of what someone else is going to think is funny.
Yeah,
you know.
I wanted to ask just like what other stuff you have going on. I saw that you're doing the third party movie.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I co-wrote a movie with my partner Patrick Mahoney. Hi, Patrick. A third party is a feature length mockumentary comedy that follows five third party presidential candidates in the build up to a big third party debate. By the time this airs, it should have come out. It should have come out, or it'll be coming out. So hey, guys, go check it out. get them views. Tell all your friends. Tell your parents. And that was what a blast. What a joy. It was a lot of improv, right? Because we cast some very, we cast Connor Ratliff, Catherine Mudon, Jim Santangelo, James Dwyer, Ryan Carroll to be like our leads. All great improvisers. And so we wrote a script and we threw it away and we wrote a script and threw it away. And then we wrote a script and then for some of the candidates, we would give them like scripts and be like, okay, these are the beats, go. Some we would just be like, okay, this is the scene where blank. Go, here it is. Go, figure it out.
Yeah.
It was really, really lovely. It was like it was a very different type of improv to do, because like even it's like a step further past the movie where it's like, oh well, you're trying to imitate a movie. It's like, no, well, you're in a movie. You're in a movie now.
Yeah. Have you written a movie before?
No, absolutely not. So this was the first one.
What was that? I mean, because I know you just said you wrote mm-hmm. a script and threw it away. Mm-hmm. Like, what was how? Movies take so long
to
write.
Yep, they do. So I was on a beta team.
Is this Horse Plus Horse?
This is Horse Plus Horse, yeah, nice. beta team Horse Plus Horse with Patrick Mahoney, and he would direct some of my videos, and we always had like a nice like a sync up. And so I think it was like a year after we broke up, or 6 months or something, and like I was feeling kind of like a little adrift. Like I think a relationship had maybe fallen apart, and like I think maybe my Harold team, something, I don't know. I just felt like kind of lost. And so I remember calling up Patrick and being like, hey, I liked working with you. Let's do a thing. I don't care what it is. And he's like, great, same. And so he actually pitched this to our beta team, like for the last election, like third party thing.
Wow.
Yeah, right. So it's been like in the back of his head for a while. And we pitched a lot of ideas together, but like, hey, man, we're 2 years out. Like, we could get this done, I think. And so we did. And we wrote this movie, revised it. The first draft was terrible. But part of what Patrick's gift is, and I think this is probably good advice for, like, collaboration in general, but, like, find people whose skills are complementary, because Patrick Mahoney is a man who will get things done. Like, he like, finishes things that he starts. He gets things accomplished, and that's what's one of the. In addition to being like a very funny man, he gets things done. And so, like, I remember we were on like our second or third version of the script, and I was like, "Oh man, we got to revise this." And he's like, "Well, good. Well, but we're gonna like start shooting in 2 weeks." I was like, "No, Patrick, we can't. We've got to revise this, and this won't work. And oh, if we fix this, we have to throw this away." He's like, "Cool, we can do that. Like, we're starting in 2 weeks."
Wow.
I was like, "Okay, cool, man." And so we did it. Which is great. You know, like, improv is wonderful, and it all the skills are so transferable.
Yeah.
But to have something done using those skills that you can, like, show to people is really a joy.
That's awesome. Well, do you have any other things you wanted to plug or things that you're excited about?
Let's see here. Boy, that's the thing that's taken up my life.
Yeah, I'm sure. Forever. Yeah. Anything besides your huge movie?
My huge movie? Yeah. No, yeah, totally.
Tons of things.
Totally. What did I want to plug? No, I mean, The Curfew, I'm there every Saturday, 7:30. It's lovely. Those guys are so great. They're a joy to play with every week.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John. This is great.
This was such fun.
And that was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when John Timothy will be your host. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.